This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Amanda Eisel. Amanda's got this remarkable, remarkable career. She's the CEO of Zelus, which is a payments company in healthcare. Brilliant company, brilliant leader. We're going to talk to her today about priorities, about her leadership. She's been at Bain, McKinsey, Harvard Business School, at University of Virginia. She's probably most part of the University of Virginia of all those. We'll talk about advice for leaders and a lot more. Amanda, can you take a moment to just tell us a little bit about yourself and about Zelus?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for taking the time, Scott. So as you said, CEO of Zelus, I have I've been really fortunate to spend most of my career working with technology companies and have spent about the past 5 years of my career working with companies in the healthcare space. Was really lucky to get to spend my early years learning at McKinsey and then at Bain Capital. So I think we'll talk a little bit more about that going forward. But I say learning because I think of the first probably two decades of my career truly as just an extension of my education. Zelus, as we talked about, we are the leading payments company in healthcare. We price, pay, and explain healthcare, and really think we sit in this unique place in the market using technology to improve the healthcare experience for payers, providers, and members. We process over $1 billion of healthcare spend a year. So as you can imagine, that's a lot of healthcare, a lot of healthcare data, and a lot of ways that we can really improve the system.
And as a sort of payments company in healthcare, when you look at the next 12 to 18 months or 12, 15 months, whatever it might be, that time frame, what are your big priorities now at Zelus? I mean, how do you look at your top three or so priorities?
Yeah, I'll probably talk about it in two different ways. So let me talk first about the business priorities and three things there. The first one is just our payments business is crushing it right now. You know, as you can imagine with COVID and everything that's happened over the past couple of years, the thirst for electronic payments has just gone through the roof. And so part of our business, a big part of our business right now is just fulfilling the demand that we're seeing come from our payer and provider clients. And, you know, that comes in the form of right now driving the payments. I think what gets all of us really excited is thinking about how do we innovate on that? How do we take some of the exciting things that are happening in other industries and payments, things like real-time payments, and bring them to healthcare? But right now we're just we're spending a lot of our time fulfilling the growth that's coming through. The second big place that we're really focused on is No Surprises Act and transparency legislation that has come out. This is, you know, for anyone in healthcare, probably one of the biggest pieces of legislation that we've seen in the last decade or so. Two different pieces, but they tie together closely. And in particular, on the transparency regulations that are coming through, the amount of data that will be put into our system in the coming years, both on the from payers and providers, really for the benefit of members in the entire system, is just extraordinary. And so we're getting our arms around in the near term how we serve our clients with different transparency and NSA products, but in the longer term, how we use that data to really transform how payments work in healthcare. And then the final area, and it touches on what I just talked about, really expanding what we do on the member front. So we just did a really exciting acquisition at Zelus. It's called Sapphire Digital. We think it's one of the leading transparency navigation and access tools in healthcare. That for us is just one of the first steps in a vision to bring together a lot of these cool, innovative technologies that are out there, help our payer clients really build out their technology and improve the member experience in doing so. So those are the three big things on the business side. And then I would say, you know, I think any CEO would be, you know, remiss right now to not talk about biggest priority is people. We, you know, I think we're all facing this challenge of people have been trying to work behind Zoom screens for the past 2 years and are just facing, you know, unbelievable complexity and change in their lives. And so for me, so much of my time is spent around, you know, my team, my organization, and how we get people, you know, motivated and driving, you know, and going forward and starting to get back to whatever I'm going to call, you know, the new normal of life to be.
Fantastic. So really four concepts. I mean, one, executing on the core business, which is growing like crazy and going fantastically well. Two, being a part of helping everybody work through this transparency efforts, no surprises in healthcare and billing and so forth. Third, strengthening the technology platform, which is so, so important to everything. And you talked about an acquisition there in Sapphire. And fourth, probably as much as anything, constantly having the people, the right people in place to make this all work. How many people are at Zealous? And also talk about, I think you recently took over, not very long ago, as CEO of Zealous. Talk about that transition to taking over a mega company as CEO, and how do you deal with that? There's all these books written about the first 90 days, you try and figure things out versus trying to make big changes. How do you sort of look at taking over as CEO of a mega company, and how many people are at Zealous?
Yep. So let me start there. With the Sapphire acquisition, we will be about 1,500 people at Zealous. In terms of your question of how do you take over, you know, I would say I had a huge advantage in that I had worked very closely with the Zealous business for 2 years before taking over as CEO. So being an operating partner at Bain Capital, I'd spent the 2 years working with the leadership team, with the founders of the business to figure out exactly how to, you know, grow and drive the business. And in fact, had spent a period of time being the interim CEO last year. And so I say that from a perspective of, you know, getting to come into a business where you already deeply know the strategy, have helped to craft it, and also deeply know the team and the people. That's a big leg up as a CEO to have that, from the get-go. So I would say my approach maybe was, you know, a little bit different than someone who has to come in and learn the business. My approach was very focused on, there were some leadership changes that, you know, that we needed to make to get really the right people in the right seats. And so, you know, did that fairly quickly. I'm a big believer in terms of change, you know, when you know the change, make the change and hopefully get it in your, you know, rearview mirror so people can know where they're headed and feel like, all right, I've got, you know, clarity about where we're going. The second part was around the Sapphire acquisition. You know, that was one that actually we had started doing the work around it last spring and was, you know, really, really clear that we wanted to get that acquisition done. And so, you know, a good part of my first 35 days was around doing that deal and getting the, you know, really the plans in place for not just doing the deal, but what happens once we make that acquisition? How do we bring them into Zealous and grow together? And then the third part has really, you know, back to this people part, been spending a lot of time with my team and their direct report. So, you know, I set out to talk to all 80 members of our SLT in the first, you know, month that I was at the company, having one-on-one conversations, just hearing where they were, and then also spent a bunch of time with my team. We went on an offsite really to set this course of, you know, we're all quite aligned on the vision and the strategy and where we're going. We've done a lot of that over the last 2 years, but how are we going to work together as a team? How are we going to come together and achieve this? So to me, that's the, you know, critical foundational work that if you do it well, I think it just really accelerates the ability to have impact.
I think those are a couple of magnificent thoughts. I mean, obviously you came to this knowing the business far better than somebody coming out through a search or something like that. But this concept of aligning and clarifying the strategy, aligning and clarifying with the team, and really being on the same page. And I love what you said is that when you know a change has to be made, you're better off making the change than delaying. And I think that's also a very helpful piece of advice for all of us. Talk about, you spent a lot of time at two of the most magnificent, at least, names for brilliance in the country, at McKinsey and Bain Capital. I know I've had a chance to visit with Devin O'Reilly on the Bain Capital healthcare side before and so forth. But, you know, both institutions known for really bright, really motivated people. Give us a moment on what leadership advice would you give to a younger self of yours in terms of becoming an emerging leader and growth and learning and so forth. And what you said originally was, look, I viewed my first several years as learning versus anything else. And I tell my daughter that, who's a young consultant at a big four accounting consulting firm, it's all about learning right now. But talk about, what advice would you give to a younger version of yourself?
Yeah. You know, as I look back at my career, probably some of the things, and not to say that I've done everything right, but some of the things I think that I did do right that I'm grateful for. One is this notion of, you know, stay at a place and grow and learn to the extent you feel like, you know, I see a path here for myself and I feel like I can learn. I spent, you know, probably, I guess, 8 years at McKinsey and 11 years at Bain Capital. And I think there are some folks that look and say, you know, every 2 to 3 years, what's next, you know, jump around. I looked at it the flip way of saying, gosh, is the first 2 to 3 years, you're just kind of figuring things out and where to go and starting to build relationships. And those are the things then that you get into further years, start to grow and blossom and you develop. And so anyway, I think really, you know, looking within your organization for how can I continue to learn and grow and develop is, you know, the right first place to start. And then I always tell people my career has been this kind of progression of take the best door open, and those doors will open at the right time, and have, you know, have faith in that. So long story short, you know, I went to Bain Capital because they were trying to recruit my brother. And he said to them, I'm not the right person for you. You should actually talk to my sister. It's strange things like that that I think sometimes happen, that a door opens and you say, well, gosh, I didn't see that coming. It's not what I planned for, but it's the right thing for me to go do next. And, you know, to some extent, it was the same decision with Zealous. A lot of people ask me, you know, has this always been your career aspiration to be a CEO? And the honest answer is no, not necessarily. But when the opportunity presented itself, because of Zealous, because of the team there, because of the challenge ahead, it was one of those things where it's like, gosh, I can't say no to that. That's really exciting. I'm going to go do it. So we'll see a decade from now when I pick up my head and say, what's next, what that looks, you know, to be. But just encourage people to, you know, put their head down, work, and then assume that, you know, that right door will open.
No, I think that's terrific advice. And it goes this stay and grow and learn, is that the more you dig in versus dabble, the more deep the learning experiences are and the more opportunities that ultimately come about that are significant opportunities. The second you said, which is also that if you have faith, doors will open, and then keep an open mind as they open is also a great perspective. I mean, you don't have to every day be searching for the new door. You keep your mind a little bit on what the doors are, 10% of your mind space, whatever the number is. But do be open when opportunities come that may be different than you originally expected, at least to think about them and have an open mind. But I love this concept of stay and learn, stay and grow, because so many people are in the dabble, and the results from dabbling are so much less than the results and the growth and the learning from digging in and staying. And just it's not the case in all situations, but largely I think that's just as magnificent advice. Talk a little bit about you've also as a professional, as a person, been involved in some outside community organizations, whether youth villages, Make-A-Wish, some of the other things you do. Take one moment on why that's important to your overall perspective and what you do as a leader in person.
Well, those things balance me. I am so deeply grateful for the opportunity to work with organizations like Youth Villages and Make-A-Wish, because it reminds me candidly of, you know, some of the challenges that I face in a business context. It's all the more real when you're working in nonprofit organizations where you're working with, you know, children and youth that have a tremendous need for one life circumstance or another. And so, it's funny to me because those organizations and the CEOs are always just so incredibly grateful, I think, of the business leaders that give their time. And my response is, you know, often like, are you kidding? I'm so grateful that, you know, that you give me this opportunity to do this. And I think we all have obligations of, you know, for those of us who have been given the gift of training, like, you know, McKinsey, Bain, HBS, or whatever it is, you know, whatever training you've gotten in your life, I think a part of that is to say, I'm going to take those skills and capabilities and give back with it. So yes, I feel grateful to get to do those things.
Thank you. And one further question. You're both UVA business, undergraduate, Harvard Business School graduate. Where are the nicer or brighter people? Which do you prefer to spend time with, the UVA people or the Harvard people?
Well, that is a totally unfair question. That's like asking which of my children do I love more? And I'm I do not have an answer to that one either. I am so grateful for both of those institutions at the time that they came in my life. I will say UVA, the ideals of, an institution where you commit to, I will not lie, cheat, or steal as part of being in a community. It's a really, really cool thing to get to go be part of, particularly, when you're 18 to 22 and just forming your views of how a society should work. And then likewise, HBS, to have the opportunity, in your late 20s or early 30s, and go and just, day after day, sit with really smart people in business cases and talk, share perspective, debate issues. It's an incredible way to expand your mind. So I am proud and thankful to have good friends from, both of those experiences that carry along with me in life.
And it seems like so many magnificent women leaders have come out of UVA. It's really a remarkable thing, isn't it? I mean, how did that happen? I tend to come into so many great women leaders from UVA. Remarkable institution, isn't it?
It is a remarkable institution. And I think one of the things that UVA really gets right is creates incredible student leadership opportunities for your 4 years there. And so if that's what you are, interested in doing, you have these just unique opportunities in an early stage in your life to stand up and lead, and the good and the bad and the hard decisions that come with that. But I think it paints a picture then for what you can do later in your life and in your career.
Fantastic. And the people at Harvard Law School versus Harvard Business School, who's brighter and nicer of those two communities?
Well, that's a really easy one since I didn't go to Harvard Law School. Clearly, it's the business school that would win all day long.
Fair enough. Amanda, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker Private Equity Podcast. What a remarkable career, remarkable leadership. I love the clarity of the priorities that you have currently at Zelos. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thanks for doing it, Scott. Enjoyed it.